Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. It's been a month. We're not going to apologise anymore. We're just going to be who we are. And I am Howell, and this is Jamie.
Hello.
And this is Matthew Wandless.
Yes.
Welcome to it. So been kind of impossible to talk about all of the things that we've watched in the last month because it'd be the longest podcast in history, but we'll touch on some of them. I want to first of all say hello to Lee, who has emailed us. Excuse me, and apologies,
I
Lee.
Love an email.
Lee has emailed us in the past as well. This is quite a big one. I'll read fast. Hope you guys are doing well. Just a quick message of appreciation for the recommendation of Mrs. Maisel. Thanks. I think it's top 10 material. Strong characters, some great humour, does a flea bag in combining hilarious situations with some serious issues, i.e. misogyny, homophobia, racism. Just loved Abe, Susie, Moish and Miriam. I ate up the Tiger King pretty quick. The owners of all the animal park sanctuaries throughout, very unpleasant, properly vile. Another case of the internet being utilised to propagate hate and bilious rage.
Can I just quickly cut in there? Have you seen the video of Carol Baskin wishing Rolf Harris a happy birthday and hoping that he has a nice time with his friend Jimmy Savile?
Oh, Jesus, no.
Someone did a really good put-up job on her and it worked perfectly. Oh, anyway, carry on with Lee's letter.
Wow. Oh, and that's from recently?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Animal care, certainly not a priority for any of them. The story just got stranger and stranger. I think I'm going to bounce off Bob's Burgers 4 episodes, Jamie. But BoJack was another show that I reckon is top 10. Thank you. I'm doing well in this email at the moment, I think. The last season really lays out how shitty BoJack is and makes you wonder about whether you want him to come through his difficulties. I did a bit of Game of Thrones with it and watched season 2 afterwards. It makes me wonder if the writers knew the end point or saw an opportunity to take a story down a very dark route. Either way, fantastic. Currently, catching up with Killing Eve and Better Call Saul. The new season of Better Call Saul has started well. I've watched 2 so far and I'm predicting Kim walks before the season's complete. I think I said it on the last podcast, but Jamie was right, I was wrong. I throw away all of my everything bad I said about Better Call Saul. It's incredible. I loved it. It's just incredible. It just properly turned lots of corners for me. And Lee goes on with a little bit more. Love the tension in the car scenes with Nacho. The dad is lovely, and Lalo's disregard for risk Nacho was taking in collection of the stash. It felt like a Breaking Bad episode. Yes, you're right. That's how it started to feel a bit more, I think. I had no problems with the last season, but that was a really strong episode. Almost pure fan service for people that have stuck with it. Killing Eve, bit meh at the moment. I have dropped off Killing Eve during season 3 as well. Just don't think it has the magic.
I finished it, but it did lose a bit of its... je ne sais quoi.
Thanks, Lee. If you want to email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com will come to us. It is lovely to hear us affecting your life in some way.
Yeah, thanks, Lee.
Yeah, some really good thoughts there. I don't agree with everything. I mean, bailing on Bob's Burger is an absolute travesty, but I think he's interesting comments.
Good on him for doing the 4, though. That's some good stuff.
Yeah, he did do the 4.
I'll tell you, I didn't do on these 3 things. Space Force, Hollywood, and Snowpiercer are 3 things that I think all are series that really could have been great, and it wasn't through any particular mistake. You almost can't work out why it's not great.
So these are all on Netflix, aren't they?
Yeah.
And first of all, Space Force, because I've not seen it, but a big Netflix thing. It's the guy behind The Office, Greg Daniels, who's created it. It's got Carell, John Malkovich, Lisa Kudrow. So it was like a big, like the trailer looked fairly funny. So I was kind of thinking, oh, I can't wait to have a slice of this. But not good then.
Well, it's an inch off, and I think with comedy, if you are an inch off with your tone, you're doomed. You know, it's like the jokes are, it's a very funny concept, the things that happen in are very funny, and I'm watching it and I'm like, it's like inside me I'm really cheering it on. I'm like, just do that a little bit faster, just don't be quite as dark as you're being, just, you know, it just misses the biscuit, and it's quite upsetting that, because you're really not watching something and going, oh, lazy idiots. You're watching and going, oh man, they're going to be so upset when they watch this, because they're going to know that it's really good. It's almost there, you know. It's just, you can't be almost there with comedy. You either make them laugh or you don't, and that's it.
Yeah, so you're saying do not watch it.
I'm saying it's not funny. I think it's worth watching for that reason alone. Like, I don't think you'll watch it, James. I think you should watch it. I don't think you'll watch it and go, oh, this is absolute Steve Carell sacrilege. I think you'll watch it going, oh, I can see why Steve signed on to this. And you've got John Malkovich there. And it's almost like the component parts are too big, too expensive, too heavy for it to rattle along in the way that it needs to. You know, like John Malkovich, for example, what a great actor. But was he... is he quite able to do this style? And what is the style? Should it be Airplane, or is it Spaceballs, or is it actually something much darker? And I think that's the problem. Is it like, it really could be an almost a documentary? Could almost be The Office, but classier. But right. It's not. It's set. It's kind of sci-fi. You know. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I'd like you to just watch one so that you can deconstruct it.
Yeah, I'd like to. I will give it a go, I think, just to sort of, just because I'm curious if it is a car crash or not, you know.
You just want to take it apart and put it back together again. You know it's all there somehow, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because Greg Daniels did Upload, which is on Amazon at the moment, and that's full of unknown actors, and I didn't know any of the cast, and I really liked it. It was like another sci-fi, almost like a Black Mirror idea, but in a more comedy sort of elements to it. And I thought it was really good, and it was quite a gripping story as well, but funny. So
I think fundamentally you've got a main character who is, you know, the basic premise is that this kind of a guy who's expecting to be made chief of the army or whatever is actually made chief of the Space Force, which is this weird thing no one talks about in the middle of the desert. He's getting sucked, money is sucked out from it, and no rocket ever launches, and so it's a nice kind of concept that he's been sent away from Washington after 50 years of service and expected a big promotion and has ended up there. But the issue is that he's also playing a kind of an oddball, which means that it's quite difficult to know whether you're laughing with him or at him, or whether you're empathizing or not, like far more so than he does in The Office. I think that's the problem, but I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a shame, and I can see why people slag it off, because, you know, if you don't make them laugh, they'll slag it off.
It's a big shame for Lisa Kudrow to do something after so long and have it fall on its arse.
Well, she's great, you know, she picks it well, doesn't she? In everything that she's in now, she appears for, like, five scenes. That's her sort of thing. She's just there for five scenes.
She's done other stuff. I haven't seen her anything.
Yeah, she's been in Kimmy Schmidt and... A few things, but she always just... It's like she's very wise. She goes, I'm going to do 2 days on this. that's what I'm going to do. Perry Mason has been brought back from the dead. Perry Mason has been remade.
I haven't seen it. And it's something I've seen.
Starring Matthew Rhys. And we won't dwell on it because it's still coming out. It's being released on Now TV. It's an hour long. It feels long. Robert Downey Jr. has produced it. In terms of my criticisms of SAG, you could make those criticisms. You could also say it's gruesome when it doesn't need to be gruesome.
Oh, big time. The first episode is as dark and as... I mean, because the Perry Mason we're used to is very different to what this is. The Perry Mason we used to is the 90s kind of TV show where it's like a... It's kind of a detective-based, but also like a courtroom-based drama. and it's quite. It always felt quite a little bit cheesy. Yeah, a little
it was
bit cheesy. Sort of,
it's awful. I tried to watch it again recently. It's awful.
Really,
the main guy, yeah, Perry Mason's amazing.
Raymond,
but
yeah, Raymond Burr, who plays music, he's really good, but. This is obviously like looking at his backstory and with a very much more of a darker tint on it. But it's got a great cast. And I started watching it and I thought, I don't know if I'm going to stick with this because it is quite heavy going. But I just watched the last episode. I don't know if you've seen it, Howell. Yes. And it's great because it's like it starts to come together. The story starts to actually like pick up a bit of steam.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good.
You just got to go with it and get lost in the world and allow them a bit of indulgence and
is
see it where
the Dark Knight meets Diagnosis Murder?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's like they took the Dick Van Dyke character from Diagnosis Murder and showed him when he was a young man. And it turns out he was a bit of a crazy drunken fool and a slightly dark man. And the thing is, though, it's in good hands because Matthew Reese, who I love from The Americans, and he's also in a few films these days, in that new one with Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers, what it's called. Yeah. But he's a really good actor. He's so I could watch him do anything. I really love him, and I love him when he's doing. He's good in a dark, sort of complicated, conflicted character. He really nails it.
Is he the main bloke in The Americans?
Yeah, yeah.
I taught him everything he knows in my theatre Clwyd days.
Did you meet him?
No.
Oh.
I think I might have done, but I didn't direct him. I think he was there briefly, but
I almost got to the end of the first series of The Americans, but then I ran out of steam.
Oh, you know, it pays off down the road, but you have to go far down the road to get the juicy payoff.
I tried to watch an original Perry Mason on YouTube, and I'm not joking. Right. It's as good as Joey doing Days of Our Lives in Friends. Like, it's that bad. Yeah. He's still great, but everything else in it, oh my God, it's horrendous.
Because they are based on books, and I think the actual book material is a bit darker than what the TV version was, so maybe that's...
But it's a great concept. I mean, essentially the concept is big lawyer who always saves the day last minute, right? And Matthew, what they've done with this is great. Mandalorian, finished that finally. Yep, great, loved it. Great direction. The music's brilliant. The
big tick on the Mandalorian.
Big tick there. Yeah. I can watch the entirety of the end credits. Just I could watch them all.
Oh yeah, I love that music. It's almost like Rocky music that they end on every episode, like that.
It's excellent music. It's sort of got a touch of the I can't remember the name of the Morricone about it.
Yes, just passed away.
Spaghetti West. Yeah, I know. Yeah, spaghetti western kind of vibe with just enough of. I don't know, something else, something slightly modern thrown into it. Reminds me a bit of the Predator music as well.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's a really good ending. It sets it up nicely for another series as well, doesn't it? And I'm
impressed by that show because I've been rewatching the Star Wars films a lot recently with my daughter. Mm. And we watched The Phantom Menace for the first time for me for about, God, it must be about 15 years, I think.
Wow.
Maybe longer. And I wasn't disappointed in the sense that it is just as shit as I remember.
Right.
Like you can't believe how bad it is when you watch it. It's just like, wow, this actually got made. Mm. And people said, yeah, I guess that's all the work we're going to do on this.
Mm.
And put it out. It's an unbelievably poor film.
Have you
and
watched the
I'm not.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not a fan of the new ones either. And so it's really nice to see someone not fuck up in the Star Wars world for once.
Have you watched the documentary on Disney Plus about the directors?
About Star Wars? No, I haven't.
It's really, really worth watching. It's how do you pronounce his name? Jojo Rabbit and Wilder People.
Taika Waititi.
And the other four or five directors who directed The Mandalorian.
Oh, from the new ones?
Yeah.
Oh, from The Mandalorian. Sorry, okay, gotcha.
It's them and... oh, my God. I'm tired. John Favreau. It's them and Jon Favreau talking about it, and Jon Favreau chose them and brought them in, and you just get a real sense that, like, you've gone for the supreme, like, genuinely brilliantly talented people who are also huge Star Wars fans, and you can trust with it, you know.
Yeah.
So they went about it as best they could. There was still the odd Star Wars thing that annoyed me, but I tell you, it got me over my one of my issues with Star Wars was always the stormtroopers just obviously being extras rattling around in suits that don't fit them. I could never get past that for some reason. And in this one, I love the scene.
That scene with the two stormtroopers. It's brilliant.
Yeah, really good. You finally get. And not only, like, it's hard when you're watching something like that, you're aware of the legacy, right? You're watching it and you're going, they're doing a theme with two stormtroopers and they're being witty and they're purposely giving them characters and they don't need to, but they're doing it because they've never done it before. But the two guys who played those parts were really funny as well. You know, they did it well. And that's the difference, is a lot of the new Star Wars stuff, like a lot of the new Star Wars stuff, I watch and I go, ah, the nod to the fans is larger than the actual quality of the thing, you know, if you were watching it having never watched anything before. And that's what they've done.
Do you know
so
as well, sorry, just thinking of Disney Plus, for parents with smallest children who you like getting into Star Wars, Lego Star Wars on that is brilliant.
Oh, great. I started watching Lego Frozen and it was hilarious. They're just a great team. Just
they've got
funny.
A really good knack for this stuff. To give enough to the kids that they enjoy, but also leaving a bit for the parents to have some fun with.
Just a quick mention of two more things on Disney Plus. One is there is a documentary on there that's the making of Frozen 2. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's a series. It's an incredibly well-made series. And when you get a glimpse into the what has to happen for a film like that to be made... It's mind
animation, man. Mind boggles.
And not just that the I'm experiencing a bit of a down slump in my anxiety issues at the moment. Unfortunately, I was doing quite well during lockdown, and when we went to watch Frozen 2, I cried like a baby from beginning to end. And we walked out, and I said to Sarah, "That's not." It's not just about depression, it's about anxiety. Specifically, that is, someone who wrote that is writing it for people with anxiety, I'm telling you. And we came out and we watched the documentary last week, and there's a bit in it, and Kristen Bell talks about, sorry, the writer, Jennifer Lee, she talks about the whole theme in it, which is about do the next right thing. And she said, it all came from a conversation she had with Kristen Bell, who suffers from huge anxiety. And Kristen Bell had said that the mantra she'd given herself when she couldn't face getting out of bed was she'd come up with this thing, which was do the next right thing. The next right thing is to get out of bed and clean your teeth. The next right thing after that is to get the kids out of bed. The next right thing. And that's where it all came from. And this whole plot through the thing, which is all about do the next right thing when one of the characters can't put one foot in front of the other. And so, you know, tragically, I was right. So it's just brilliant. And, you know, you get a glimpse into the pressure. You get a glimpse into the Disney size, which can have success or cumbersome failures. See Star Wars and all of that, you know. But it's just brilliant. Can't recommend it highly enough. As per Hamilton...
Hamilton.
I will be quiet now, but Hamilton, what a brilliant move for them to put it on there. Can't imagine how much Disney paid for that. Colossal amounts it must be. But what a wonderful gift to give to the world. And yes, it's as good as Matthew and everyone said. Isn't it brilliant?
It really is. And having seen it, I've seen it twice live. Because my wife and I both bought it as gifts for each other's birthday. And we've listened to the soundtrack countless times. And it was a real treat to see it with the original cast, because Leslie Odom Jr., who plays Aaron
Burr...
Oh, he's
brilliant.
Which one is he?
Just something... Aaron Burr.
Which one's Aaron Burr?
Aaron Burr's a name guy.
Who's not Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Room Where It Happened, yeah?
Room Where It Happens. That performance in that song
incredible.
Is just out of this world. Like everything, he's doing so much in it.
Yeah,
and he does it all just with incredible grace. And
he's like a magician. He literally moves like a magician.
The song of his that I've been listening on repeat though is "Wait for It." Oh, I love "Wait for It."
Which one's that?
Oh.
It's a good song. It's the most poppy number in the show.
Yeah, I love a good poppy number. it's an absolute barnstormer. I thought the first half of that show was like it was just relentlessly brilliant song after brilliant song, and I thought, this is how are they doing this? Like, how are they just? It's just non-stop. The second half, it kind of slows down. It goes down a darker, you know, showing the ending and everything. It gets a bit more dark.
Yeah, it changes the game, doesn't it? It's like you can look at any musical and maybe pick out two phenomenal numbers.
Well, exactly. Like, look at because literally it's singing throughout pretty much. Like, so it's you have to compare something like Les Miserables, which you know is like. Is good songs here and there, like you said, but it's not like one after another, just a brilliant, and not just, and all the female performances of the sisters are just and stunning, and like it's just the bit where they rewind time on stage. Do you remember that
satisfied.
Bit?
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh, freaking him! I mean, it's just a really stunning show, and to think that it all came from Lin-Manuel just doing this 15-minute medley. Performance of Hamilton's story, and then he built that into this musical, didn't he?
Well, have you seen the thing he did at the White House?
Yeah.
It gives me chills to watch that every time because it's the opening number essentially. But I didn't know anything about the show really until we went to see it, and we deliberately avoided reading anything or knowing anything. And I just remember, like, the opening line of the show is so succinctly brilliant. And it was just, I remember just very, very clearly remember sitting in the, we had amazing seats because a friend of ours is a West End producer type. We managed to get these really nice ones for the first time we went to see it. And just that opening 12, 20 seconds, whatever it is, just knowing instantly that it was going to be amazing. Mm. And then to see him just casually performing it at the White House and with just a piano accompaniment, and then that later became this thing. It's just it's wonderful. It's I don't like to get involved in hype like this very often, but it is just you can't deny it. It's wonderful.
If you look at your screens, boys, just for you, this
at this point in the podcast, I show Matthew and Jamie a photo of somebody who is connected to another podcast that I've done with Lin-Manuel Miranda, who he worked with for a number of months. And that's what's going on. Sorry for the indulgence. And by the way, if you want to hear that other podcast, currently as we record, if you look in the new and noteworthy section on iTunes, we have appeared in it. It's called The Adventures of Brian Hovis. We have remade it, we've rewritten it, we've re-edited it, relaunched it, and it's made it into the new and noteworthy worldwide fame. If you've not heard it, I'd love you to hear it. You won't hear me, but you'll hear stuff that I've slaved over and written for the last few years. And back to the show. Advert done.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, he's good, but I did feel he was the weakest part at the time. Like, he's not as good as the singing. He's not quite the best at the rapping side of things. He's good, obviously, but... And, yeah, he's the one you kind of look at as the weak link, but yet he created the whole bloody thing, so you're like, okay, you get a free pass on that, mate.
Well, that's exactly the same as the box set pod, though, isn't it? You just got to accept it. You don't have one without the other, and that's it.
Yeah, but very good, though. Yeah,
From there, let's go, because David Diggs, who plays Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, is in Snowpiercer. Which I'm curious to hear about.
Snowpiercer was a film, wasn't it? Did you watch the film?
Yes.
I've seen the film, yeah.
It's a great film. It's a really underrated film.
It's not that good a film.
It's a good film. I think
it's a fucking weird film.
It's weird, but it's like it's a very interesting, dark, sort of like dystopian future
concept, isn't it?
It was one of those. It was a film that was made by the guy who just won the Oscar for Best Director. What's his name? What was the film he made?
Parasite.
Parasite, yeah. It was made by Bong.
Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah. And it was buried by, guess who? Harvey Weinstein made it, and he buried it for some reason. I can't remember.
Sorry,
why.
Did you lose me there for a second, or did we lose Jamie?
No, we didn't lose anyone, I didn't think.
Oh, I lost the audio for a second. I didn't realise it was Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah, yeah. And he was really gutted because he loved the film. And he got a bit of a cult status afterwards through word of mouth. So what's the TV show like?
It has a low-budget feel to it, but then what it's trying to do is so high-budget that that's hard. That might be a really harsh thing to say. It's like... We've stopped at the end of episode one, so I don't want to judge it too much, but it feels a bit... you know when people are playing refugees and they're playing them a bit hard? It's like a bad, like a matinee Les Mis performance. It's hard to describe, but maybe it'll go somewhere, but it feels a bit... I'll tell you what it feels like. Do you remember The Pines?
The Place Beyond the
Place
Pines.
Beyond the Pines.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Remember series...
No, hang on, no. What?
No, not Place Beyond the Pines.
Place
the
Beyond
Pines.
The Pines is a Ryan Gosling movie.
No, the Pines it was called, wasn't it? We talked about it on the podcast. The World...
No, I know which one you're calling, but it's not called just The Pines. It's called...
Are you thinking
else.
Of the M. Night Shyamalan
yeah.
one?
Yeah, that one.
I know the one you mean, yeah, yeah. What is it called? It's something like The Pines, isn't it?
Pines
Wayward Pines.
Wayward Pines. Pines.
Wayward
well
Pines. Pines. There you go, thank you.
You know, if you got as far as series two of Wayward Pines, this feels like series two, right?
Feels as far as episode two.
Feels like the budget's gone out a little bit. I'm not being dragged back to it, so we'll leave that there. But if someone wants to cheerlead it, then please do, and I will return to it, and maybe I'll change my mind. Let's just give a mention to Normal People, which took me a long time to get to, and lots of people suggested us watch it.
This is going to cause it. Problems.
Oh, no. Oh, Matthew. No.
I did. My wife was watching it, and she convinced me to have a look at it, and I did, and I was not pleased.
Oh, what? How is that possible? Did you start from the beginning, or did you just get on board?
Yeah, of course it started from the beginning, yeah. But no, I honestly just got bored watching it. And I've watched three episodes, I think. And yeah, I had better things to do, man.
Well, this confirms...
I might give it another go, because I've a lot of people have said good things about it. It's not just...
If you don't have a soul, you're not going to find one by the time you watch it the second time, are you?
What? But hang on. All right, come on. What's supposed to be so amazing about it? It's just two people fucking.
That's what they said about Romeo and Juliet.
I don't think it is.
It's phenomenal. It's one of the most beautiful writing. It's delicate. It doesn't go over the top. It's slowly just reveals things.
It definitely doesn't
slowly.
Go over the top. I'll definitely say that.
No, it doesn't.
I mean,
I understand.
The top is not something it's seen.
It didn't. I've got to say, it didn't make me want to watch like every episode back to back all day, but I think it's like it's not massively cheerful or fun or adrenaline.
I tell you what, that
place.
Show needs is car chases.
Yeah, exactly. It's not got much of that.
If it had a car chase, that would be good.
The way that it reveals the characters over all of the episodes, right up until the last couple.
They don't reveal the characters until the last couple of episodes.
Well, not really. I mean, you how much do you know about them? Like, how much do you really know about them?
An awful lot, and I think that's part of the problem for me.
Yeah, you want it explained.
I don't want it explained. I'm not after that, but I want something. At the moment, it's just a couple of kids who seem a little bit out of place in their lives, and they sort of find each other and start fucking.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I need a little bit more.
I think you'll
I heard
get
there's
more.
Just lots of sex, right?
There is a lot of sex. If you want a,
have you not watched it either?
No.
Oh my god!
If you want some porn under the guise of art, go for it.
Oh, I can't believe it. This is how you felt with me and Meryl. I tell you, oh, I've got news. I enjoyed something that Meryl Streep did.
Really?
Like, thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was in Mary Poppins 2. And the whole film I didn't like. And Meryl finally was cast in a part that she's meant to play, which is this massively over-the-top sort of almost gypsy-like character.
Oh, wow. God, I forgot about that because it was so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's
really
what turned you.
Finally, yeah. she found the part that she was meant to play. So that was good. But
I mean,
listen,
this is just conclusive proof that you shouldn't ever listen to Howell Evans about anything.
Apart from
the only time you liked Meryl Streep was when she was shit.
Well, let me say this: anyone who's watched Normal People, that has just the tables have turned entirely.
That's, no, you know, I'm not going to say I'm not done with Normal People. I might watch it again.
Oh, I'm planning on watching it. I do want to watch because I've heard very good things, but I was put off by the fact that I heard it's just lots of sex. And
no, you know, saying that?
I'm not a big fan of that, Jamie.
I'm not a prude or anything, but I get sex scenes in TV and film. I always think I just want to skip them a little
All right,
bit.
I would guess that in the whole series there's five sex scenes.
Unless the sex scene is for plot-related.
I've only seen a couple of episodes, and there's already been, like, four sex scenes, so unless there's only
one
in the rest of it.
You've got one more left, haven't you? Okay, so, really, the reason people are objecting to the sex scenes is that you're actually seeing
penis. I don't care
about
the sex scenes.
A man's penis is being shown, and I've noticed this.
Well,
have you noticed the new trend?
I'm not okay with that, obviously.
Have you noticed this, that penises are the tables are being evened and
they're making
seeing
a
more penis? Yeah, they're making
they
a comeback.
They don't show an erect penis. Though,
no, absolutely
they?
Not. Absolutely,
that's not allowed. That's the one rule, isn't it?
No.
I think the only erect penis in a mainstream film is Michael Winterbottom got a mainstream penis erection one of his things.
Lars von Trier did as well.
I bet he did.
Antichrist has got full on X-rated penetration in it.
Wow.
Really?
Now, Normal People...
Lars von Trier's, he don't suffer no fools.
Is that Willem Dafoe with the penetration there?
No, they hired porn actors to do it.
Ah, apparently. Right.
Fair Cheating, enough. Really.
I mean, there are rumours Willem Dafoe is, hung like a donkey, but...
Jesus, right. So, I've still not said one good thing about Normal People. can I just say, I consider this to be... probably the best written thing that I've seen come out of the BBC. And
let's prove that wrong instantly because Destroy You has come out within the same couple of months, and that is
Matthew.
Piece of work.
Okay, well, I haven't
Thank
seen
you.
That, but
seamless segue.
But top ratings. You've got to forget Matthew, Jamie. You've got to watch it. It's one of the most beautifully written, brilliantly pitched. Well paced, not ruined by commission, adapted from a novel, beautiful things I've ever seen. It's incredible. Just
you know what?
Stick with it.
If you had to guess which one of me and Howell would be playing for Normal People, you'd think it'd be me.
Yeah,
very hard second guess.
And yet, what's happened? It's strange.
Yeah. Very
well, hard. I think I do want to give it a go, but you give. I May Destroy You a go, Hal, because, well...
I will.
Take it away. Take it away, Matt.
I was really quite taken aback by this show.
Yeah, me too.
Because I don't often, and I say this with shame, I don't often enjoy new British stuff. I don't know. I don't know why, but I don't.
Neither do I.
And,
it's always crap, apart from Normal People. Carry on.
I do struggle with the BBC's output sometimes, and this is... I don't know. I don't even really know what separates it apart, because it's got a lot of things in it that I wouldn't like. Like but it's doing a kind of authentic take on modern... Oh, God, I hate saying stuff like this, but it's doing like an authentic take on modern city culture, which just feels so authentic and so kind of on the pulse of present day London that it just sings, man. The whole thing fucking sings.
Yeah,
and
it feels just gone. Yeah, it, you feel you're watching something written by a voice of the, of like today, in the same way when you watched Phoebe Waller-Bridge doing Fleabag. But this is even more like it's about society today and about sexuality today. Covers so many, many different things. And the main plot is that this female writer suffers a date rape that she can't remember, and it gradually comes back to her. It follows her journey, sort of discovering how she feels about becoming a victim of this crime and overcoming the demons that present itself, but also her friends' own experiences with sexuality as well. And there are
episodes you hear that and you think to yourself, oh God, I'm going to have a grim time watching
this. Yeah.
And it absolutely isn't.
No.
It's really, it's very funny in places. It's really bright and kind of just pacey and vibrant. And I don't know, man, it's just, it's just nailed it. Like the speed at which the story is told, the way in which it's told, the central character, like Michaela Cole, who's written it and stars in it, is brilliant. Like, she's a really just kind of stunning to look at person. She's she's got this incredible face and body as well, for what it's worth. But she's got a manner about her which is she's very captivating. She's got a screen presence which, you know, only a few people are really lucky to have.
And it's weird because I don't really think I've seen her in much before. I haven't watched Chewing Gum, which was a big hit on Channel 4, I think, and won some awards. And yes. I haven't seen anything else she's been in, which is a shame because I think she's been doing other good stuff as well. But this
comedy, funnier Channel 4 stuff was great.
I watched a bit of Chewing Gum. I didn't enjoy it as much, unfortunately.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching it.
But what was interesting, that's older, and it was just great to see the kind of like emergence of someone. I mean, that sounds really patronizing. Obviously, I haven't done any of this stuff, so it's not like I'm in a position to. But you can see that there's a maturity in I May Destroy You, which Chewing Gum doesn't necessarily have.
Good stuff. We need to do the quiz.
Hang on a second. I have to talk about Homecoming.
We'll have to wait till next time, I'm afraid.
No. Let's just do a long one. Because who has championed Homecoming in the past? Was it Jamie?
Me. I've watched series 1 and 2. Have you been in both? Have you, Matthew?
I'm in the middle of 2 at the moment, but bugger me, I was completely blown away by 1. I thought it was fucking great. Mm. And I, for some reason, when I heard the title Homecoming, I thought
1 minute.
Oh, this is going to be about high school fucking stuff. It's going to be about homecoming dance or something like that. And no idea what it was about at all. I just knew it had Julia Roberts in it. And it was being prominently advertised on Amazon, so I just thought, oh, it's only half an hour, the first episode, brilliant, I'll watch that. With me and Hannah watched it, and we nailed through 4 of them straight away. And it's one of the sharpest, smartest TV shows I've seen in ages. It's the story is so well put together, and the twists and turns are brilliantly not heralded, or they don't hold the audience's hand. They don't whip you along with them. You have to figure shit out if you're going to keep up with it.
Did you listen to the podcast?
No, and I only remembered that it was a podcast in the second series because they put it in the credits. Mm. But the weird thing is, I'm sorry, this is a bit roundabout, but I was watching the credits and the name Matt Lieber came up.
Time up, Matt.
No. The name Matt Lieber came up. And I was like, Matt Lieber? And because I listened to this podcast called Reply All, and at the end of the credits of Reply All, every time they always say Matt Lieber is something really lovely. Like they say to the one I heard today was Matt Lieber is before you get bored of it. And
is what before you get bored of it?
Snow.
Oh, great.
And Matt Lieber is the CEO of Gimlet Media, who also run the Homecoming podcast.
Yeah.
And so I suddenly remembered you telling me that it was a podcast, and now I want to go and listen to that. But yeah, it's incredibly smart TV show, and everyone should watch it. And I love what the hell's his name?
Stephen James.
No,
Bobby Cannavale. Yeah,
he's brilliant.
He's very good.
Cool.
Yeah, I know. I recommend it too. It is really good. I've enjoyed it. Howell.
Yeah, I started watching series one. I probably need to go back to it. I struggled with the style a little bit, but I enjoyed
the
podcast.
What is playing in the background?
What the hell is that?
What is it?
I can hear faintly. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, it's Sopranos music.
Wow.
Lovely.
Welcome
technical.
To the Sopranos quiz. 10 questions, and I want assertions. I want promises, absolute sworn promises that you two are not looking at the internet.
I would never.
I don't cheat.
Some of these are very easy to find on Google, okay? So be decent, honourable people.
Like hang on, let me just pull up IMDb.
New film on Apple TV, which is very good. Here we go. Question number one in the Sopranos quiz. Also, where are we up to with the scores on the overall quiz, by the way?
Why do you always ask this? You should just look it up beforehand. Because no one has any idea. I think it's 1-1.
Pretty sure that you... Oh, we had... 5 for Jamie, 14 for Matt.
It's just the worst radio. Listening to you through your fucking notes. Honestly, you try and shut me up when I'm talking about homecoming, but you're happy to sit there and go, oh, I don't know, it was one the last quiz.
When you were doing your review before, you used one sentence, lasted about 4 minutes, and all you said was the word authentic. I'm going to paste it in here.
It's got a lot of things in it that I wouldn't like. Like, it's but it's doing a kind of authentic take on modern... Oh, God, I hate saying stuff like this, but it's doing like an authentic take on modern city culture, which just feels so authentic and so kind of authentic on the pulse of... I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Question number one. What year was James Gandolfini born? Nearest wins.
What year was he born?
Born.
Whew. Are we saying now, or are we writing them down?
You're writing them down, please.
We're writing them down, aren't we?
Okay.
Next question. Question number two. What year did Sopranos first air? 97, 99, or 2000?
Oh, that's a toughie. That's a toughie, toughie, tough, tough.
97, 99, or 2000?
Oh. Okay. All right.
Alabama 3 wrote the theme tune, Woke Up This Morning. But what nationality is the lead singer of Alabama 3?
Oh. Jeez.
Question four. It was the second hour-long HBO drama ever, in fact. It's thought of as the first kind of box set, but no, there was one before. It was the second hour-long HBO drama ever. What was the first? I was going to give you multi-choice. Do you feel like you need multi-choice with that?
Hang on.
The first longest HBO drama, did you say?
The first hour-long HBO drama.
Okay.
Yeah. Sopranos was the second hour-long HBO drama, the second kind of box set of its kind, not the first. What was the first?
Oh, man.
You know what? I don't
want
multiple
crickets. That's a good question.
I want this to be a real thinker, but I'm going to need a second.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to get it, I don't think. I mean,
woke up this morning.
Good God.
Let's crack on.
Okay. Here we go. I feel like if Jamie doesn't have an answer, we should do the multi-choice, though.
He can come back to it.
Question number Five. 27 members of the cast were in a famous gangster film. Which one? 27 cast members of Sopranos were also in a supremely famous gangster film.
Hello?
Which one? Hello, Matt.
Okay.
Sorry, I've crashed out there.
Did you hear the question?
I heard the one about 27 people.
That's the one. 27 members of the cast were in a gangster film. Which one? Question number 6. Why does he choose Dr. Melfi as his therapist? What's his logic?
Oh.
That's in the first episode, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, why? You know this, Matthew.
No, I don't know it. I just remember that I have a vague memory of him talking about that in the first episode.
First or second. But yeah, no, it must be first. He certainly picks her there. Whether he explains it there, I'm not sure. Question number 7. Who gets out of... Hang on. Who gets out of prison in season 2? A point for the first and a point for the last name.
Who gets out of prison what, sorry?
In season 2.
Oh, in season 2.
Do you want the actor?
No.
Shit.
Oh, it's going to fucking kill me. I can picture his face.
Oh, God, yeah. I don't know.
Point for each name, so if you can remember the name. Question number 8. How many episodes of The Sopranos were there in total?
Okay. Here we go.
Question number 9. By the end, how much was Gandolfini being paid per episode? Closest answer wins.
A terrible question, Tal.
What were you expecting?
Questions to do with the show, the actual show, what happened in it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Like the therapist and who gets out of prison and this question. Yeah. Question
number
10.
There's not so many questions that are answered with numbers, you know.
Question number 10. How does Richie die?
Richie.
I thought I was going too easy with this.
I'm taking a pound in.
Isn't he?
Careful what you say, Matthew.
Yeah.
Go a bit straightforward death. Ugh. I've not done well on this. I've been bad.
Great film on Netflix starring Steve Coogan and Paul Rudd, which I've not seen before. Just do a search on Netflix for them too.
Oh, I think I saw a trailer for that, yeah.
It's funny. All right. Any repeats? Do you want any questions repeated?
Can I have the multiple choice for number 4? Because otherwise I might get a big fat zero. Yeah.
Okay. So your choice.
If my guess is in there, then I get points.
It was second hour long HBO drama ever. What was the first? Was it Oz, 6 Feet Under, or The Wire?
My guess is in the group, so that's interesting.
Okay, right.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if it was beforehand. Go on then, yep.
Question number 1. What year was James Gandolfini born? Nearest wins. Jamie?
I've gone with 58.
58.
Oh, I've gone with 65.
Jamie wins. It was 61.
Oh,
bollocks. I almost year out 62. There. That's really annoying.
One point to Jamie.
He wasn't 1 year out. He was 3 years out.
No, you were 1 year out further than Jamie.
Ah, okay.
What year did Sopranos first air? Was it 97, 99, or 2000, Matthew?
99.
Jamie.
Yeah, I've got 99.
Is correct. Well done.
Yes.
Point each. Alabama 3 wrote the theme tune, woke up this morning. What nationality is the lead singer of Alabama 3, Jamie?
British.
Matthew?
I went Cuban.
He is Welsh, and I will not give a point for British, because that was
not come on.
The point. Come on, British has got to be given. Nope. That's a point for Jamie.
No, no. That is harsh. Sorry. No. I can't do that. It was the second hour-long HBO drama ever. What was the first? Matthew?
I had 6 Feet Under.
Jamie?
I went with Oz.
Oz is correct, Jamie.
Yeah, I think I was going to go with 6 Feet Under, but I think it was after Sopranos.
It was the next one.
The other one I was thinking of was who made HBO... who made Twin Peaks?
I think that was on a mainstream channel. I think it was on Fox, maybe, or something like that.
Maybe it was, yeah. Just for some reason, it was nagging at me, but I put 6 Feet Under anyway. Go on.
Question number 5. 27 members of the cast were in a famous gangster film. Which one? And it's Jamie to answer first.
Goodfellas.
And Matthew?
Yeah, Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is correct.
Oh, yeah.
27, hey. That's good. Why does he choose Dr. Melfi as his therapist, Jamie?
She's sexy.
Matthew?
Well, I think it is slightly to do with that. It's because he could conceivably say that he was just banging her. It's also something to do with her being Jewish.
The answer, you're both incorrect. The answer is her name.
Oh. Ah. Why does he like her name, does he?
Yeah, I can't remember the specific reason, but it was a name. Wasn't it related to something?
Have you fact-checked that?
I don't need to fact-check that, it's correct.
Gotcha.
Who gets out of prison in season 2 for a first and second name get a point? Matthew?
Richie.
And what's his second name, if he's called Richie?
I thought it was Cifaretto, but I'm not sure.
Jamie?
I don't know. I put Vinny 2 times.
Richie April.
He's Jackie's brother.
You're going to give him half a point for that?
I'm going to give him 1 point because he got one name. So 1 point there.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How many episodes were there in total, Matthew?
78.
Jamie?
56.
Oh, Jesus God. Matthew wins. It was 86.
Oh my
86.
God!
Jamie, how many seasons were there? 6 or 7?
I thought there was 5 series.
By the end, how much was Gandolfini being paid per episode? Closest answer wins, Jamie.
800,000.
Matthew.
I put $1 million.
The answer is $1 million.
Dang it.
And so where are we with points? We've got how many have you got, Jamie?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh yeah, where'd you get your fourth from? No, I can only see 3 there for you.
I got 58.99. Oz, Goodfellas.
Oh, you did. You got the first one as well, yeah. And
I should really have got
5 because of Wales. Yeah.
Thank you, actually, Matt. I should have that.
2, and Matt's got 3, 4.
What? It's 4
all.
1, 2, 3, 5. 4. 5.
So it's 5-4. This is Jamie's chance.
If you give me 5, Howell, then it'll be whoever gets the next one right wins.
All right.
Actually, no, I've got.
I'll give you
anyway.
It. I mean, at least you didn't say English, so you know that would have been an absolute no go. I'll give you it because on his passport,
you're too good to
it'll
me.
Say Britain. And
right, so it's 5 apiece.
So it's 5 apiece as we come to the final furlong, which is. How does Richie die when he finally gets it in the whatever? Richie April, how does he die? Jamie.
Strangled.
Matthew.
I thought he was shot by Janet.
Richie April was shot by Janet.
Come on. Howell, did you watch like one episode of Sopranos with Richie April in it or something? Why are you obsessed with that? There's so many characters that are on the show.
I actually put that question in because I thought that by me saying the question, it would help you out to go back to question 7 and remember the name, which it did for Matt.
So, well done, Matthew. All right.
Well done, Matthew. That was excellent. Excellent work. Congratulations. Well done, everybody. And we will see you sometime in the next 2 months as we continue to talk TV on the Box Set Pod. If you want to email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com is, as ever, our email. Final thoughts, Jamie?
I just want to say everyone should listen to the song Wait For It on Hamilton. It's the best song. Okay,
Matthew,
do you know, I can pretty much recite the entire libretto for Hamilton.
Do it. Do give me room where it happens. Go.
I don't want to do that. Not on the recording.
Oh.
I just want to be in the room where it happens. The room where it happens. The room where it happens.
Two Virginians and an immigrant walk into a room diametrically opposed foes. They emerge with the compromise, having opened doors that were previously closed, bros.
The best thing Matt's ever done.
That was very nice. Very nice.
And thank you. Goodbye.